How you doing? It's your boy, Jonathan Macri, in 2026. How you doing? New episode of NBA Takedown. I'm here with my guy, Jeff Johnson. Jeff, how are you?
Happy New Year, brother. I'm doing well, feeling rested, rejuvenated, and ready to take on 2026 in all its glory.
How do you do New Year's resolutions? Is it one resolution? How seriously do you take the resolution? How long do you stick with the resolution? What's your track record? You got to tell me these things.
Oh, yeah. So I track my goals. I don't really go the resolution. You could call it, it's semantics at this point, but I make smart goals.
Okay.
So specific, measurable.
You're talking to a former teacher.
Oh, right. But just for those who may not know, if I say smart goals, you're like, well, I hope they weren't stupid, because then why are you making those goals, right? But they're specific, they're measurable, they're attainable, they're relevant, and they're time-based. So instead of saying, I want to lose weight, okay.
Great.
Who, what, when, where, why, how? You would say, I want to lose 10 pounds by March 1st or by April 1st, right? So in 90 days, you want to lose 10 pounds. That way it's specific and it's measurable. You can measure the time from now until the end of March so that you're able to track your progress. And that's really part of the goals. It's tracking your progress. So I have a spreadsheet I've been using probably over 10 years now, where I track my goals. I have month to month milestones, and I'm like every month, every week, I'm going in and updating so that I know if I'm falling off, that's the time to course correct. I might have to update them because maybe something changed in me or in the environment where they're no longer relevant to what I want to do, or I need to just adjust. But that's really how I keep it. I tried to keep it to like 3 or 4 major goals and then see what happens.
I'm not even playing right now. I'm legit inspired just hearing that. I'm not even kidding around, because I could see that being something I would have done in the past before I had kids, and you have kids and then things change. And yet logic would dictate after you have kids, it's all the more reason to do exactly what you're doing.
Yeah. It just keeps everything. It keeps it all the main thing, right? Like they say, keep the main thing the main thing. Uh-huh. It keeps it all in perspective, and it puts it in one place where you can track it and you're able to check in on it, because you go through life gets so busy. We're going to blink and it's going to be December.
Dude, it's
which is insane to think. Time is both long, it's both extensive and short in the blink of an eye. Our lifetimes are specks of dust in the overall story of the universe, right? Like you live to 100, you probably lived 0.0005% of the universe. Yep. And that time goes.
More zeros.
Because we get busy, right? Probably even more zeros,
more,
right?
A lot more zeros.
Billions, trillions of years, depending on what you believe. Yeah. So in that time that you have, the better you can track it, the more impact you can make on those actual goals. And as you said, like, you know, I have a kid now, and I've had a kid. I'm a veteran now. I can't even claim to be a rookie anymore. She's past one. She's almost two. So it's like, I'm a veteran. I can't claim too much ignorance at this point.
Having a kid, the track of having a kid is the same as the career of an NBA player.
Yes.
Like we watching Tyler Kolek right now. Tyler Kolek still makes some like silly rookie turnovers, right? You'll still be doing that shit, whether you realize it or not.
Of course. So yeah. So that to your point, it makes it all the more relevant to say, yo, I got to make goals that incorporate my kids. I got to track my kids' goals and make sure that I'm being a better, it starts with yourself, better self, then you play better roles. Because this is all, you know, they say life's a stage, right? You play different roles throughout the course of your life, and sometimes you play multiple roles. So you want to excel in every role. And it's not as difficult as it sounds. It's just you focus on one thing and get better at it, and 1% better every day, you're good.
One, doesn't surprise me at all to hear you taking this approach, knowing you, how I've gotten to know you over the last few years. Number two, my first goal of 2026 is going to be to carve out the 2 hours it takes to make these goals in this spreadsheet. But I'm going to follow through on it. It's going to happen this weekend. That's my first goal. By the end, time-based, right? By the end of this weekend, It's not even the weekend yet, so I should be able to do this. I will be able to create this spreadsheet.
Tomorrow cooked because the Knicks play a back-to-back. Thank you, Adam Silver and the NBA. So Sunday, just aim for Sunday, bro. Just aim for Sunday and put, okay. And let the chips fall where they may.
We got this. That's great, man. Okay. So, and you had a good New Year's Eve because I haven't, we were texting on New Year's Eve.
Yeah. Like, no, it was great. I mean, you know, I could tell you how I know I'm in a totally different headspace. Last year, that Knicks loss wouldn't have ruined New Year's Eve, spiral. But I would have been annoyed. I would have been annoyed. This year, I was just like, I could laugh. Like how Jalen Brunson hit that three at the end and everybody was like I love Bismack Biyombo. I was like, bro, We gotta go home. Like, it's all right, yo. Like, no, bro, no. We have to go home. Like, that's, everybody wants to go home. So that just shows the different headspace that team is at, and just me in general too.
Well, the Knicks may come up again on this podcast because we are doing 5 bold predictions, 5 each. So I should have entitled the episode 10 bold predictions because we're doing 5 bold predictions each. We have 5 categories. We are going to get to those in a moment. First things first, if you are checking out the show, if you are listening to the show, please help out the show. Subscribe to the show on YouTube. Turn on your alerts on YouTube so you know when we're going live. Most importantly, follow us wherever you get your podcasts, because that's how we help the show grow and more people find out and we get to do more stuff. That's first of all. Second of all, let us start with...
2, 1, 0, ignition. Liftoff.
All right, I'm going to get this one off quick because it's pretty simple. Rich Paul is my new most annoying member of the media.
Why is that?
Did you catch his latest snippet from his latest episode with Max Kellerman?
Was it about the Cam Reddish take?
I read
the transcript of it. Yeah, I mean, he has way more belief in Cam than a lot of people, but I know there's a lot of people out there that hold that belief based on the potential that they think he could have risen to. Like, I thought he had hella potential, too.
So,
but at some point, the burden of proof outweighs what you believe.
And that's where I'm at, because with the burden of proof, I could tell already Rich is going to be getting off takes where the burden is like all the way to one side. I'm all about like, we got to keep it in the middle. There's a healthy gray area of every discussion where I could think one thing and you could think something else. And we don't meet exactly eye to eye, but at least we're in the same room.
Right.
And I could tell already Rich is going to be coming out with these things where I'm like, man, it is outside the room. It is outside the building. It is the next town over in terms of the accountability piece of it. You know, saying that basically Cam Reddish is not an NBA player because of everybody else's fault except for Cam Reddish. Like, come on, you got to meet me somewhere in the middle, dog.
Yeah. We can agree that he underwhelmed as a player. He showed flashes. I think even he may tell you that he didn't perform how he thought he was going to perform. Yeah. It's fair to say maybe he was in the wrong situations. I take that because I know there's some players who thrive. 100%. Like my Galaxy brain idea that it's no coincidence that Wembanyama went to the Spurs because you just could not mess him up. And the org that you would put all your money on that they would not mess up a can't miss prospect is San Antonio. So that might be serendipity. That might also be somebody's thumb that was on the scale, right? But I, you know, when I think about that, environment has a lot to do with it. Luck has a whole lot to do with it. But I do think, you think about these guys like a Jabari Parker or a Michael Emmanuel Mudiay, like guys, even with like a Beasley, I've seen it and I've seen it consistently. He was just too inconsistent. But I've seen it enough where I'm like, okay, you want to have a Michael Beasley conversation? We could have that conversation because he's shown enough flashes over a course of time where you're like, yeah, if one thing would have went the right way, maybe his head wasn't all the way in it. Maybe it was whatever, like that's on him, that he could have been even better. But I've seen him be the guy that people thought he was going to be. He just wasn't consistent.
on the flip side of that coin, and I, full transparency, I love throwing shade at this dude, but I'm going to throw some more shade at this dude. If Draymond Green got drafted by the Hornets.
I knew it. I knew it. Yeah.
Great minds already. You know, Kings or pick any of these organizations, like, would he still be in the league? Like, let alone would he have had a Hall of Fame career? I don't know. I'm like, maybe there's 30% of players that get drafted into the NBA that would have succeeded no matter what. There's like 30% that would probably have not made it no matter what. And then there's maybe like a middle 40%, you know, something, maybe even closer to like a third. I don't know. Something like that. And you can make the argument that Cam Reddish is in the middle group. And so maybe I should give Rich Paul a little bit more respect, but I just, the way he phrased it got under my skin. Do you have a take you want to get off before we get into predictions?
Yeah, sure. And maybe this is something we'll revisit later. I've heard it too much. You want to talk about being annoyed. If you are in favor of reducing the NBA schedule to 65 games or something that's not 82, I do not believe you like basketball as much as you think you do or in the way that you think you do.
Okay.
Because there are so many other options around the game that can be modified to sustain 82. First off, why would you want less of something that's good?
That's very fair.
Right? First. Secondly, how are these people so confident that less games will make a better product? As if tanking won't happen, as if load management won't happen. It's a whole season. You don't perform 100% at work every day of the week. There are times where you're going to take off. There are times where you have a bad game. Wizards Hornets might not be something that everybody taps into, but there might be the off chance where it is a good game. I saw that 22 million people watched Kansas City Denver game. I need to know why. I need to know why you would subject yourself to that, knowing that the playoff races would have already sewn up. But I already have the answer, because the casual NFL fan likes football. They don't care how, they don't care when, they don't care who's playing. If it's the holiday, we putting on some football. We're going to watch these guys crash into each other and hope we get a good game. Even if we don't have a good game, we're still going to keep it on because we love the game. And I think a lot of these folks, media fans alike, are not invested in the love of the game. They're invested in what a spreadsheet tells them or what they consider to be an avant-garde idea, when it's not even guaranteed that games will be played to that highest level. The NFL is now 17 games. And the argument is, because there's only one game a week, every game matters more. Boy, I've seen some bad football this year in games that should have mattered. Football, terrible football. But people still watch because it has now become America's game. And I believe the casual fan is in it for the love. I think the casual NBA fan might be in it just to argue about the NBA. So this is where you blow off your steam. And the NFL is where you go and watch for the sake of entertainment. I just don't understand why, especially people in the media. What do you think is going to happen if there's less games, guys? What do you think is going to happen to the economy of the NBA? What do you think is going to happen to you?
Well, that's
I'm just saying. I think it's corny, man.
So my idea that I've pitched a few times is to not reduce the number of games, but add a second tournament. A second in-season tournament, and then have the state, and then they have two in-season tournaments, maybe different times during the year, and then make the stakes of those matter a little bit more. And then basically just as another way to further eventize the games that are already being played, you know, because that is the one thing that the NFL has done a really good job of doing, is it doesn't matter if it's a shit game between, as you said, two teams, playoff race already decided the whole thing. People are going to be like, well, it's an NFL game on, so I'm just going to put it on. The NBA just does not have that sensation where the average American household, it's not every American household that put on that game, but like enough of them did to get the number that you're saying. The NBA doesn't have that right now. I will say, and again, this is a topic that's going to come up in our look back at 2025. I think the streaming stuff, while it has done some things that are not so great, I do think it feels like, oh, it's the NBC game or the Peacock game tonight. Like, oh, it's the Prime game tonight. And as we get later into the seasons, like, oh, it's Sunday ABC, whatever. I think they've done a good job of making those matter more, yeah, or feel like they matter more.
Yeah. And you hit on the most important point. Now we're in a culture building phase, yes, for the NBA, their next culture, yes, building phase. They now have league partners and broadcast partners who are solely invested in the advancement of the game because they're new partners. So they have to sell it. Amazon, the NBA Cup is Amazon's cup.
Yep.
So they have no choice but to elevate it. And I think you have the injection of new energy with the
and they
new
know how.
Hosts. Huh?
They know how to elevate it.
And that's the other thing. You know, it's some people throw money at a situation and it doesn't improve. I ain't gonna lie. I don't care for billionaires, but this guy Bezos, he 9 times out of 10, where he put his money, he will give it to the people who can do the job and say cook. And for the most part, they've been cooking. And it's just, I think you're going to see a shift because the NBA is going to be presented as a premium product from this point forward. I believe it's going to be presented. And that's where you're going to see the evolution eventually of the culture where, hey, we're going to throw on this NBA game on Christmas, or we're going to throw on, it's Monday night, it's Tuesday night, it's Cup Fridays. Oh yeah, well, you know we're going to get a good game. That's going to be the culture building that needs to happen.
I don't want to step on predictions because I was thinking about doing one on this, but it'll be, and this isn't even a 2026 prediction. This is more just like the next 5 years prediction, something along the lines of like how the NBA navigates what we're talking about, where it's like, oh, it's Cup Friday, something like that, and making it a thing versus what the freaking commissioner of the sport said 2 months ago or 2.5 months ago about, like, we're a highlight league. People don't watch our games, you know? So it's like, what is there? I'm assuming there's a plan here, but like, I want to know exactly. I would love to know. I would love to, you know, be inside some of those rooms where this stuff is getting talked about, but
for sure.
We'll see how it all plays out. All right. Predictions. Let's do it. So we got 5 categories here. We're gonna go through them one by one. And we'll go back and forth making our prediction for each category. The first one is we are going to predict the biggest shocker of 2026. Before we do, we're going to pick what was the biggest shocker of 2025. I'm going to list the candidates. Jeff, you're going to tell me the winner. Mm-hmm. All right, here are my candidates. And if there's something not listed, it's probably because it comes up in a later category. So biggest shockers of 2025. Pacers finals run. Cavs Celtics not making the conference finals, either of them. And then this is a little late to the party, but I think it deserves mention. The state of the East right now, as it's been really over the last 2.5 months at the start of the 25-26 season, where a lot of the teams that you expected to be higher, maybe a little lower, and a lot of teams that you expected to maybe struggle or a little bit higher. So what was your biggest shocker of 2000? And if you have another candidate, those are the only three I came up with.
From this list, I would say, man, and for me, it's probably a coin flip between the Pacers finals run and the Cavs and the Celtics, both of them not making the conference finals. I hate to be wishy-washy like this, but the Pacers were under 500 entering last year, January 1st. They were like 16 and 18. They looked like, and I think Hallie was on and off with injuries. They just looked like they were going to be a middle-of-the-pack squad. And then they just came out of nowhere and got hot at the right possible moment. And you could argue if Halliburton doesn't pop his Achilles, that game 7 is probably more of a cardiac affair than it ended up being. So I'll say the Pacers finals run because
it has to be.
It has to be, right? Because yeah. I'm more shocked that the Celtics didn't make the conference finals than the Cavs.
If you said
the Cavs weren't going to make it, I wouldn't have been shocked. The Celtics, I would have said, okay, was it that they met in a different bracket? Something like that. They canceled each other out. And then in the semis, they, you know what I mean? Like that would have been the only way. But that Pacers Finals run came out of nowhere. It came out of nowhere.
It came out of nowhere. And the thing that I think we shouldn't get lost is, like, it might be less shocking now than when, but as it was happening, like, it was, I mean, there were people who I think picked them to not even make it out of the first round. And then, you know, obviously to go to the finals is crazy. All right. I'll start us off. This is a tough one because, biggest shocker, you are by definition picking something that is, like, maybe not on people's radars. So maybe the one that I picked is not gonna be a shocker to many people, but I think it qualifies in the shocker category, which is, I think, and I don't want to say this out loud, maybe I'm trying to reverse jinx this. Maybe that's exactly what I'm doing. I think Jason Tatum is going to come back. I think he's going to be awesome, and I think the Boston Celtics are going to enter the Eastern Conference playoffs as everybody's near universal favorite to make it back to the finals.
Oh, I'm not.
You don't like it. I don't like it.
I mean, I don't like it. I'll just be full transparent, but I can be objective, right? I think that a lot of media members are ready for this to happen so that they can fire up their Boston isn't dead. This ain't a gap year takes that they had cooking. They have cooking already. And just for him to come back, I mean, that would be the biggest wild card in this entire Eastern Conference playoff storyline so far. Like, how is he going to look? Is he going to be Jason Tatum this year? Do you get the Jordan 45 effect where he's like 65-70% of himself? And is that effective for the Celtics? Is he going to be disrupting what they already have? Like, it's fascinating. It doesn't really shock me, but I know if that man comes back in like April, March, I would expect odds to shift on the sports books. I would expect
picks, I think they to will shift.
I think we have heard this narrative about the East being wide open. Despite what we're seeing, we have continued to hear this. The East is wide open. It's anybody's taking because they did not want to just concede it to be a two-team race because then that's not fun. So it's not fun. It's not interesting. It doesn't generate enough engagement, incitement, or mind share, right?
So this will generate excitement and mind share.
So leaving this narrative, the East is wide open, is leaving the back door open for Tatum to come through and shake it all up. So, it's not shocking to me, but I do hope if he does come back, I hope it's a smart decision.
I hope so too. For him, most importantly, because he should go down. He's on course to have one of the great NBA careers at the very least in the 21st century. I could even see us looking back in a few years and being like, oh yeah, the Celtics were just the team of that era. And what was supposed to be a blip wasn't really a bit blip, but we'll see how the rest of this year goes. All right, what is your predicted biggest shocker of 2026?
I think my biggest shocker is going to be that a major contending team is going to blow it up after this playoff run.
Ooh. So I want to nail this down. A major contending team. I would define the major contending teams in the NBA right now in no particular order: Thunder, Rockets, Nuggets, Spurs, Timberwolves, Lakers. Right.
I mean, that's the top five. That's the top six in the West.
And then Knicks. I mean, are the Cavs a major contending team for you?
They're my number one. They're actually my number. I'm their contender emeritus for me right now. But like the record isn't going to say it. But I would say I'll amend it. A team that was considered a contender going into the 25-26 season is going to end up blowing it up after this season. Is that better? Is that enough?
No. I think that's fair.
A preseason contender is going to end up blowing it up before the end of 2026.
Yeah. I mean, I would look at the Cavs and I would look at the Wolves, although, like, blowing, they're not, I mean, unless Anthony Edwards like goes in there and demands to be moved. They're not moving Anthony Edwards. Like, is there a world where the Cavs like blow it up? Like with Donovan Mitchell's like, I know I just signed the extension, but
what happens if they don't make it out the first round again, John? Well, what happens if they go to the play-in?
They're eighth right now. The eighth.
Yo, imagine if it's Cavs Pistons in the first round and the Pistons eliminate them.
I mean, I'll just be transparent. I'd much rather that scenario than Cavs Knicks in the first round. I'm not saying that I would like pick the Cavs to win or anything, but like, it
smells like Knicks Sixers 23-24.
It smells a lot like that.
It smells a lot like that.
And that series, like, not to make this into a Knicks podcast. I don't think people appreciate how well the Knicks played to win that series in the way that they did. Like, it was not like, the Knicks just revealed themselves to be the much, much better team. Like, yes, they were the better team. They needed to play as well as they played to emerge from that first round. And I think similar, if the Cavs got in a series with the Knicks and they had already fallen to whatever it was, seventh, eighth in the standings, it's like, all right, well, our season's kind of fucked anyway. Let's just go out there and have fun and see what we could do with these guys. That is a situation that I would not
exactly
love to be dealing with.
Or if they meet up with your zombie Tatum Celtics.
You know what? Actually, we should combine our two shockers into one. Our 2026 shocker is just the 2026 Eastern Conference playoffs. Shocker.
I like that. I like that because they both harmonize with each other. So
yeah, that's perfect. Okay. Our next category is predicted biggest trade of 2026. Looking back, there's not much that we need to talk about what the biggest trade of 2025 was. Hello, Luka Doncic.
I'll be the old man. I'm Grandpa Simpson around the kids talking about this trade, boy.
What's crazy about this, because I tried to write contenders for each of these, it happened in the same year as Kevin Durant, Jimmy Butler, and De'Aaron Fox got traded. All of those, like, in a normal year, might have been the biggest trade of the year, and they just like are afterthoughts after Luka trade. Okay, so we'll go back to me. Okay, I don't even know if I want to say this out loud. I guess I have to. It is what I genuinely believe at this point is the likeliest outcome, even though I do not put it like at like over 50% possibility. I think it is the likeliest outcome for this player where he is going to go. And the player I'm talking about is Giannis Antetokounmpo. And I think because NBA history, if it has shown us one thing, is that one organization steps in shit just by existing and having the ability to put one leg in front of the other. And that's the Lakers. Yeah. That's my prediction. Giannis gets traded to the Lakers. Not before the deadline. This summer.
Oh, summer. We saying bye to what? Reeves and Ayton? And or Rui? Reeves,
so Rui, it would be in a Reeves sign and trade situation that the Lakers would be. So normally sign and trade situations where you have, again, not to put everybody to sleep on a Friday afternoon, but normally you have to deal with the issue of when a player gets a huge raise like Reeves is about to, the outgoing salary and the incoming salary don't match up and it causes complications. Mm-hmm. The way around this is if the team that is trading away the player is so far under the cap that it basically makes it feasible. And all of the Lakers contracts are coming off their books this summer. So there was a world where they have Luka on the cap. I think they may have one other player on the cap, and they have Reeves cap hold on the cap. And then they just do a sign and trade for a shit ton of money and probably include a little something else. And then Giannis comes back. Because here's my logic. It's very simple. Giannis is going to be able to exert more leverage this summer because he's only going to have one more year on the contract before he could opt out. So teams that might be inclined to trade for him now to get two playoff runs might be less inclined because, like, well, we're going to have this guy for a year and he may not even be happy for the year we have him. Okay. Number two, we know he wants to play for a major market. All right. What are the major markets? New York, Miami, LA. Those are the major markets, right? We know he wants to win more championships. I've been afraid of the Miami possibility for a while. I think with what Miami is actually going to have, Giannis would look at and be like, eh, do I really want to do that? Do I really want to follow in LeBron's footsteps in that way? And then you say, all right, well, what do we talk about LeBron's footsteps? LeBron is in LA right now. That's different. That's the most historically relevant franchise in the NBA. All due respect to the Celtics. Actually, fuck the Celtics. So I think he'd love to play with Luka Doncic. I think he'd love to team up with another European player. And I think he knows if he went to the Lakers, there would be championships, plural, potentially in his future. And right. And I think either the Knicks are going to win the title or if they don't win the title, they're just not going to have enough to trade for him.
Man, wow. Yeah, that it's shocking in that it's the Lakers, and it's not shocking in that it's the Lakers. You know what I mean? Because that Luka trade was only going to happen with the Lakers. And the way that it went down, it was only going to happen with the Lakers because this is what happens with the Lakers. It's annoying as hell.
If you're the Bucks, small market, you don't want to bottom out because you don't even have your pick after, like, you don't have control of your pick for the next several years. So, like, you got to put Finney's in those seats.
Yeah. You could do it with Reeves.
Austin Reeves, man. Here.
Austin Reeves, Ryan Rollins. you selling it. Like I could sell it to them at least. You know, you fight for a play-in spot. What's gonna happen? Cause Hallie comes back next year. Tatum will be all the way back next year.
Yeah.
And Boston hasn't relinquished their playoff spot.
Knicks aren't going anywhere.
So there is going to be spots up for grabs. It isn't a foregone. There's nothing a foregone conclusion past like two or three teams in the East. So yeah,
last thing, Lakers have picks, so they could they could do Reeves plus the picks, and that's what I think is going to happen. Okay, what your prediction? Biggest trade of 2026?
Man, I truly think if there is a taker, Trae Young is out of there in Atlanta. And I think if I was, I don't know who, it's not Landry Fields no more, is it? It's not
Trae Young. No, it's a new, I'll look up who it is.
Right?
I'll find out.
Yeah. If I'm Atlanta's GM, I'm hitting up the Mavs and I'm like, yo, what's up with AD? What we want to do? Because you give up Trae Young for AD, you talking about Jalen Johnson, Dyson Daniels, AD, Porzingis Orokongu, and what? Nikhil Alexander Walker.
Well, so you're hold on. So you're building up a lot of salary now. I don't know.
I'll throw up my hands and say I think Trey and his salaries match. I'm not sure.
Onsi Salah, by the way, is the guy who took over for Fields and he was fired.
Okay, cool. If I'm Salah, I'm trying to figure out if them salaries match. So, I hate when people throw out trades and they don't know the salary. So I apologize for that. But
I thought they had
matching salary or it was close enough.
Something
15 off.
Yeah, whatever. To me, that part is less interesting than the part about, all right, AD coming into Atlanta, Trae Young going out. I think there needs to be a third team involved because with Kyrie already in Dallas,
Oh, right.
I don't know. I mean,
shoot, I might ask for Kyrie. They probably don't want to, but I might ask for Kyrie at that. Thank you for putting him back on the radar. He come back.
You just broke my brain.
Oh my God. What?
How about
Kyrie with them guys?
We could. I don't think they want to trade Kyrie. I think
they don't because it would be a little bit of malpractice just because of Kyrie's age. But if you're going for that one shot, if you're like, yo, this is one shot where everybody got at this at the finals.
It's not nuts because Kyrie theoretically could come back and play this year. The reason I think the Mavs will keep Kyrie is they can keep him out for the rest of this year. Kyrie marches to the beat of his own drummer. If they're like, look, man, maybe you want to come back and play for a half dozen games in April just to like show that you still got it, that's fine. But we're trying to get this lottery pick. So I think AD going out, Kyrie staying, and then again, Mavs ownership, I don't think they're interested in a multi-year rebuild situation. I think they want to get this lottery pick this year, get Kyrie back next year. Cooper Flagg's an all-star level player next year. And then it's like they think they're right back in it.
I like that. If it's not him, I don't know. It's probably somebody we don't see on the horizon yet. Like I'm looking. What I do usually with these questions, just to give y'all a peek of the curtain, is I'll just keep looking at the standings and just keep looking at the teams until some inspiration hits me. And I mean,
well,
Randall is forever on trade watch for reason. This man stay on trade watch. Marketing. I just think that nobody's paying the Ainge price. I don't think anybody's paying that Ainge price for him. And if you do, it's going to be a price too heavy that isn't going to ultimately bring your team where you want it to be.
So, you know what? Let's do biggest storyline. Let's do biggest storyline, because actually it's funny you mentioned Ainge. So before we do biggest predicted storyline of 2026, here are my contenders for biggest storylines of 2025. I have a lot of them. You got to pick one.
Mm-hmm.
Injuries. Achilles, obviously, but just injuries in general. The gambling thing. The Kawhi Leonard aspiration thing. Giannis trade thing. The Thunder's dominance. And then I didn't really know how to characterize this. I put underachieving point guards, just kind of like your Trae Young, Ja Morant, LaMelo Ball, you know, trifecta. I don't know if there's anybody else that deserves to be put in there. So what was your biggest storyline in the NBA of 2025?
Oh, it's the gambling.
It's the gambling thing?
Okay. 1,000%. Shout out to Fanatic Sportsbook. It was the gambling. But yeah, because this is as close as we've come to a Black Sox type situation in the NBA in this modern era. This has been the clarion call that a lot of folks have been ringing about ever since the Supreme Court pretty much made gambling state by state legal, mm-hmm. where it's at the state level. You opened a Pandora's box that is within individuals' controls, but when you put people in certain situations, they may not be able to control themselves. And that's why you have the regulations to save people and save the integrity of the sport from itself, from the sport itself. So I think this was only a matter of time. It still boggles my mind that millionaire players at this point would risk lifetime bans just to help other people make money and get a little bit of a cut when a sponsorship deal would probably rake in the same amount of money. I don't know if this is part addiction, part hopelessness, or a mix of the two, but I do think that storyline may bleed into this year, and it's going to be prevalent as long as the leagues are in partner with these gambling companies, and as long as it, because here's the reality, gambling in itself, the action of it, you know, depending on, I don't know what your morality views or whatever, but the gambling itself isn't bad. It's the disrupting and impairing the integrity of the game with you utilizing the gambling. So if you are in partner with these leagues, whatever, you do what you got to do, but you also have to instill something or place something in place so that this cannot happen. I think they're starting to do that now, but we have reached that point where the genie's out the bottle. It's not going back. These leagues are not going to disassociate with gambling. They're just going to try to figure out a way to regulate it to the point where they can still get their money. Everybody can still get paid, but the integrity of the game remains unshaken.
Because of that exact thing that you just said, the integrity of the game thing, I agree with you that gambling is the top story of 2025. As of now, I think there is a world where we would look back on the Kawhi aspiration thing as the bigger story. Depending on what happens with that investigation.
Yeah. But you want to know what's crazy, John? I feel like in both situations, there's been a certain measure of acceptance.
Oh,
think rock with me for a second.
Yeah.
Fans have known that boosters in college have been paying players under the table before NIL, getting cars, getting the meal plan on campus. They have been provided something under the table or over the table for their services. Just like in the NBA. How many times have we made the joke back in the dark ages, John? Yo, this star, just come to New York. You'll take a discount. I'm sure we can find the money for you. I'm sure someone in this city can make up the gap between you and anybody else. State taxes be damned. I'm sure. We got Chase. We got Tiso. We got everybody you need.
Abu Dhabi, Abu Dhabi is a sponsor.
We got whoever you need. We got Radio City. We will find you the money if you want to come here. And people have said that before. Think about why we have revenue sharing. Why they have to even the playing field for small market teams. Because we all jest. But it could easily happen because you get more opportunities in bigger markets. So the fact that you tell me allegedly the Clippers found a way to get Kawhi some extra bread outside of the salary cap. Fans, I think in general, integrity be damned, would just be like, I thought this was already happening. Same thing with the gambling. I know these players, they gamble outside of apps and all of that, like poker games and all. Yeah. We've been hearing this for years. Mm-hmm. So as long as you're not throwing games, yo, you do what you do. And if you can gain a competitive advantage, I just hope that my team is playing the same game you are. So the fact that the level that this aspiration thing is gone, once that's uncovered, I feel like, to your point, that's the first domino. And everybody's going to become a whistleblower. If the Clippers go down, I believe Ballmer and them are dragging the whole league to hell. And that's when this whole thing gets disrupted.
The extent to which they went potentially to pull all this off with and credit to friend of the KFS pod, Pablo Torre, like, that's what's going to do it, you know? And
it's like Knives Out. It's a murder mystery. A convoluted murder mystery.
And it's funny, as we said, I'm going to be like, it's going to be tough to top that. And yet the NBA will find a way. So biggest predicted storyline of 2026, I am going to go with tanking. And I was on the fence between this and something else, which I'll wait until after your take to give you what would the other thing I was thinking about. And it is purely because of the Utah Jazz. And I was looking at the standings this morning. Because of the Clippers' little run here, now the Jazz are in eighth place. They have a top eight protected pick, which means at the moment it's more or less like 50-50 that they would keep the pick, 50-50 that they would lose the pick, give or take a few percentage points. The point is they are not in secure position as of right now. We know what the Jazz have done in the past to ensure their position when it comes to the ping pong balls on lottery night. We know the league has not been happy with what they have done in the past when it comes to those ping pong balls. I think we're coming to a reckoning, and I think it's not just going to be because of the Jazz. I think it's going to be a league-wide thing, and I think there are going to be enough people that have enough of an interest in seeing something done about this where it is going to become a dominant storyline over the end of this season and then going into next season.
I like that one. I like that one. I was like going back and forth with what could be the biggest storyline. Tanking, it's funny. Like I wasn't even thinking about that, but with what has been in the news, that's an awesome. Right.
Like we talk about it, but whatever nothing gets done.
Yeah, exactly. But now that they're proposing rules to try to circumvent it once again, when elephant in the room, the best way to circumvent it is to eliminate it. But you know what I'm saying? But I don't think American sports is ready for that. So I'm going to say that the biggest storyline of 2026 is going to be the NBA 2026 free agent trade window period. Because I think we are primed to have the most movement that we've had in a minute. I think that after this season, there's going to be a lot of assessments made, right? You figure the Celtics and the Pacers are going to be whole. the Pacers are going to have to make some type of move because they gave up Miles Turner. They're going to have to figure that type of thing out. The Celtics, they may or may not be good as currently constituted. They're going to have to do something. We've been speaking about it. Y'all know us as Knicks analysts and media as well. This can go one or two ways with the Knicks this season, depending on how they perform in the playoffs and what the appetite for patience is with that front office. And I believe they're the type that think five steps ahead. So I think they already have their if then cases already laid out. And if it goes left, then it's going to get really interesting in Knicks land. I could see the Lakers, whatever the hell is going to happen with LeBron and the aforementioned potential Giannis trade, Milwaukee. Giannis is the first piece. Trey, what is going to happen with him? Are the reports true? Is he going to be out? There is another are we better than you angle brewing in the Eastern Conference that Sean with a W has been talking about for a minute. And that is in Orlando.
Yep.
What happens this year? What happens this year with that? There are so many stars. Zion in New Orleans, is he rejuvenated? Do they want to move on and give it to the keys to Trey Murphy and Derek Queen and Fears? Like, there are so many establishment stars have the potential to be shifted because their value isn't what it was coming into this season.
This is you effectively, this was my other potential storyline, which is I called it a contract reckoning in the NBA, but it's not even really a contract reckoning. I was thinking specifically about Trae Young and the fact that like he is probably going to opt into his player option because there ain't going to be anybody out there who's going to pay him despite the fact that he is a future. This is not insane. I'm telling you, go look at his stats. Go look at probably a future Hall of Famer in the middle of his prime and ain't nobody want this guy. Let's call it a value reckoning where you have all of, again, these like quote unquote established stars. And because of the dollars that they're making now and what they're going to want, what is the market for them? And how is that going to affect the marketplace in the NBA? I don't think we know the answer. That's the thing I'm most fascinated by. I'll say that.
Yeah, I've heard people have arguments over whether or not these NBA players are going to continue to make this astronomical amounts of money. and I think the leagues and all the deals will tell you that the money will be there. The issue is, are them people going to get the money? Because there might be an elimination of the middle class. There are in the NBA. Like, you got to look at it. Like, I think the capital S superstars are still going to get their bread. But I think you think about somebody like...
How many of those are there?
Exactly. So, like, the Jaylen Brown's 300 mil was the tipping point. That was, like, the first canary in the coal mine. Because, like, okay, he playing like a $300 million player now. Yeah, so I'm not going to say that he doesn't deserve it. But at the time... folks were not respecting his game enough to say, you giving Jaylen Brown. Tatum, they might have been like, I can see it. I understand. But Brown was kind of like the redheaded stepchild of that two-headed duo where people underrated him, right? But there's going to come a point where okay, I'll stick with it. Like a Franz Wagner or Paolo Banchero.
So...
or someone like that might be up for Jaylen Brown money. Are they going to get it?
It's an age thing because the two players you just mentioned, Paolo and Franz, they got paid. They just signed extensions over the last 12 months or whatever, 15 months. Whereas Cat, the money that he would be getting on the next contract takes him into his mid-30s. Similar to Trae Young. We're going into our 30s now. Like Anthony Davis. How old is Anthony Davis right now? So I think it very much ties into age, but it's fascinating nonetheless. And I think you're right. It's that next tier down of stars. Okay. Last two categories, winner and loser. We'll do loser first. My candidates for the loser of 2025, old 76ers max players. Jazz and Wizards falling in the lottery. The Kings, just because they're the Kings. The Clippers, Trae Young, Adam Silver, NBA consumers, and last but not least, inside the NBA. Who is your loser of 2025?
Why Adam Silver?
I feel like he's gotten a lot of shit, justifiably.
Oh, I got what you're saying. You know what? These are good.
Thank you.
This is probably the most contentious one that you could get. I'm gonna say Trae Young, because I don't think there's been a bigger fall from grace. Like the old Max players, they're on a team that looks hot and they're not dead like people claim they were going to be. And Paul George and Embiid are contributing in their roles around Maxey and Edgecombe, right? So I can't really fault them. Last year it looked crazy, but they got Edgecombe. So what can I tell you about that? The Kings, emeritus. The Clippers.
You should name the category after the Kings.
Yeah, the Kings, emeritus. Jazz, Wizards, lottery fallers, play stupid games, win stupid prizes. Adam Silver, NBA consumers. I mean, I think now looking at it, I think from where Trae Young was 5 years ago after that conference finals run, his Q rating to now is like night and day. Night and day.
Yeah,
for sure. And I'm like, damn, it's like, and it feels like it happened in a blink of an eye.
I should probably also have thrown Mavs fans, even with Cooper.
Oh, if you would have put Mavs fans, I would have said Mavs fans.
Only because they got the freaking number one pick in the draft. So, but yes, Mavs fans, that's true. I'll be quick with this. My loser for 2026, my predicted loser is LeBron James. I think the game of musical chairs is going to stop and there's not going to be a seat for LeBron and no one's going to feel bad about it. I think this ties in directly with my Giannis trade prediction. I think LeBron has been pissed off because he realized in June that the team that employed him was treating him as an expiring contract. I do not think anything has changed since they decided to treat him like an expiring contract. I think they're going to let that contract expire and it's going to be up to him. Do I retire? Do I go sign for somebody's mid-level exception or do I and end my career like that and be treated like a mid-level, not be treated like a mid-level exception player, but like, you know what happens once the dollars go down. Doesn't matter what your previous status was in the league. Once you take a lower contract, it's like, well, you know what? We don't have to account for you that much anymore. If you play 18 minutes tonight, that's not a huge deal. Or does he go for maybe one last payday somewhere that on a team that doesn't have a chance to win? And like, it's not how I'm sure he would have pictured ending his career. I just don't think it's going to end well for LeBron James.
I like that one. I like that. Yeah. It's if he had one more year on the contract, I could see something, because then he could go the Kobe route and just make it that his swan song. But it's like, it's setting up. And it's crazy to say because, yo, you've been around 21 seasons, but it's setting up to be wild, unceremonious for somebody of his stature. But it should not go down like that. Not for him. It shouldn't go down like that. But, nobody's blameless. But, oh, man, I have a feeling the league won't let that happen. The league or the players or the teams won't let that happen.
I think there's only one place he goes where it is something resembling the storybook ending, and I think it's Cleveland. And again, if he wants to go play for $5 million next year, okay. That's gone against everything LeBron James has literally said publicly. The man literally has said to us, those days are done. Like, does he go back on that now? And what is that? Can he stomach that?
That's why, but
in any case, who's your predicted loser of 2026?
I think it's the Milwaukee Bucks. Because I don't think they're gonna get what they could get and what they should get for Giannis. Even if in your Reeves trade, Reeves is fantastic. It's the same way I felt about the Luka trade, man. Like, I know people were like, yo, you're diminishing Anthony Davis by saying that they didn't really get anything. And I'm like, no, I think Anthony Davis is phenomenal. Did I envision Anthony Davis coming back in a trade, any potential trade for Luka Doncic? Nah, I don't think so, bro. Like even the lack of draft picks, like it, and yes, you could say that trades are constructed differently, blah, 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 blah. I get it. But for that guy, I think you should have got a whole lot more. And that's how I think I'm going to feel about Giannis. And I don't know why, but there's something in the back of my mind that says that Giannis might just play this thing out and then
go
to free agency and then go to free agency or do a pull a Kawhi. You got him. You know, I'm only staying one season. I will not commit past this season. So if you trade for me, don't be mad. Don't be mad. Don't be upset. Give up your assets. We tried this one time and I'm gone.
That's my favorite. You are my winner of 2025 for just that accent. I love how LeBron now, like, or LeBron, Giannis, like, starts off his, every time he gets asked after these games now, after like the latest bad loss, like to the Wizards, he'll just be like, well, we're in 11th place, or well, we're in 12th place, or well, we're in 10th place. And he's just like, it's like setting this. It's like, yeah, just so everybody knows, I'm aware of where the fuck we are.
Right, exactly. So just in case you didn't know.
Yeah, okay. Last but not least, our winner. So looking back, Jeff, who is the winner of the NBA in 2025? The Thunder, SGA, the Pacers, Nikola Jokic, the Detroit Pistons, Jalen Brunson, Tyrese Maxey, the Rockets, streamers, Luka, or the NBA Cup?
I mean, I think it's easy to say the Thunder. Like, I think that's an easy selection.
We don't have to spend too long. I think it's pretty simple.
I think it's my dark horse would be the streamers, because their presentation of the league has been outstanding to me so far, and I think they're catching the league at a hot moment. You know, contrary to the people who want to play 12 games a season, I think they're catching the game at a hot moment. I think they're building a culture. I think they, with the NBA Cup, they're going to start to get teams' best. And I think as that develops into the fabric of the NBA, I think that's just going to improve what we see. And I like the new casts people in Amazon and NBC. Like, I just think they found the right people.
Taylor Rooks, Steve Nash, Dirk Nowitzki, Blake Griffin, Udonis Haslam. That's going to be how we looked at inside the NBA.
Yep.
For years. That's how we're looking at. That's how we're going to look at this prime studio show, because they're awesome. Like,
for sure.
Capital A, awesome.
And I even like you know, with Melo and T Mac and Vince Carter and Maria Taylor. They put together former players who have been all stars, who have been in the spotlight and who love the game.
Yeah.
That more than anything, that we'll talk about their love for the game, and they keep it real, and they have that cachet with the current players where they're not really trying to throw them under the bus, but they will keep it real. So I think that's the contrast. Like they have a good uniqueness about everybody's studio show. Like, everybody has their own personality and their own identity, and it both elevates in their way.
And you could tell during the interviews where they've interacted with current players, you could tell the players have a respect for how this new crop goes about their business.
Exactly.
Which is obviously necessary. Okay. I really wanted to make my biggest winner of 2026 the Knicks. Part of me, even as I'm saying this, still wants to. I do believe
don't, because this is NBA Takedown, and that's good. That's too obvious.
No,
you,
but I want
KFS.
But I want. But I, you look. You know, I always keep it a buck. You know, I don't say things to Sam. You know, I don't say things to make fans. So I'm gonna just say the answer that in my core I'm like, this is, I think, the right answer, and I think the right answer is Wemby. You could argue that Wemby won 2025 to a certain extent, although you can't really say that because he missed the last X number of games the last season with an injury, didn't even make the playoffs. I think this is the year. I think, let me put it this way. By the end of 2026, there's only one thing that could stop him, and we saw what it looks like the other night, and thankfully it looks like he's not going to be that, he's okay. He's not like that hurt, but it's only injury. Barring injury, I think we're going to be here a year from now being like, he is the best player in the sport. He's the best player in the sport by a comfortable margin. and the league is his for the next 15 years if he stays healthy. I think that's where we're going to be.
So I'm going to say, like, once again, I'm gonna put my biases and this big beacon behind me aside. I'm gonna put that to the side because that's its own cat. Because I can give you a legitimate reason why I believe the 2026 winners are gonna be Knicks fans. But this is what I will say. I think the 2026 winner is going to be competition in the league. I believe that the NBA Cup is going to become basketball heritage. Whether you like it, whether you dislike it, you're going to learn to love it. That cup, I believe the, and hey, coastal bias is coming out. The Lakers and the Knicks winning the NBA Cup elevated it by measure of it being big market teams, major markets, maximum exposure. The fact that the Knicks won it, I'm telling you right now, I don't have intel. I know the league is doing backflips. The Knicks won, which made the whole banner gate sting a bit.
Yes.
But the fact that they had to restock the NBA Cup merch. Restock NBA Cup championship merch, right? Once you got, now that you have that team has won it, the Bucks, Giannis, major competitor, European players who are tied to cup competitions from soccer in their respective countries, and Lakers, legacy franchise. Now you have these first three winners, and now Amazon as an official partner who has the investment in elevating this into a part of the NBA. I think, and money is a major motivator, I think you're going to see teams compete for this cup like it is a legitimate competition. And I think that is going to energize his teams to compete throughout the rest of the regular season. Basically, what I'm saying is that to tie it all in, that 82-game schedule is not a problem because they are instilling aspects of the game like the play-in, like the NBA Cup, that will foster competition. And I think it's only going to increase from here, where I think a year from now we'll be back and say, boy, remember when people thought the NBA Cup was some bullshit?
That's going to look silly. And unfortunately, I have to agree with you regarding the Bannergate thing. I think it's going to look silly if the Knicks don't end up putting it up.
Yeah. But my other take is they're going to have a reason to put it up.
Well,
they'll have a reason to put it up.
we'll cross that bridge a different day.
Right, I think they might.
Shout out to everybody in the YouTube chat. I like Ben Kim Gerby says Mike Brown will be the winner of 2026. Hey, man. I'm here for it.
Boy, you want to talk about like Coach Carter 2020.
But that's part of why, even above their usual emeritus status, that's why I actually wrote the King's name down on the list, because they fired this guy and now are watching him freaking get the key to the city in New York, leading, you know, title contenders in the East. And Doug Christie's out there explaining away another 30-point loss with every, you know, post game press conference, which is not
the Kings could do the funniest thing ever next season.
I'm afraid to ask.
Who could they hire for their coach?
Oh my God.
Who could they hire as their head coach?
Scott Perry has the relationship with Tibbs, you know, from when they were here together for two years.
That, you want to talk about shockers of 2026. I'd be like, holy hell. Everything.
Yo, if the Kings hired Tom Thibodeau as their freaking coach,
they'd stop being a joke.
Oh. I agree with you, but like, they said this is unfair. They said the same thing when the Knicks hired Larry Brown. Now, Larry Brown saying. Also may have been a legitimate insane person by that point in time. So is Tibbs, but like, man.
That's an unstoppable force meets immovable object right there. He turns them around. If they were to do it and he turns them around, he's in the hall. He's already in the hall, low key to me, but he's in the hall.
Not yet. He's not a Hall of Fame coach. Not yet.
Where is he in wins?
God, I can't believe this is where we're ending. Of course we end our
right.
show. He has over 500 wins. He had, so basically, like, if you compare him to other Hall of Fame coaches, like, yeah, more like he needs a championship.
He needs a title to confirm it. Yeah.
You know, like, very, very few coaches are in the Hall of Fame for coaching without a championship. Like Don Nelson, but Don Nelson was like the all-time leader in wins.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I think he's actually one of the very few who didn't. I don't think Don Nelson ever made a finals. I should know this off the top of my head, but I'm pretty sure. He would need another job. But hey, listen, man, you go to Sacramento and you turn them around. It's pretty good point on your resume. Jeff, last word before we get out of here.
Happy New Year to you and yours. It's been a great ride so far with NBA Takedown, and we've made it to 2026. So I'm looking forward to more fantastic conversation on this channel and just growing into something special.
We are heading there, and we are heading there in large part because of you, my friend. It's been a blast in 2025. It's going to be a blast in 2026. Everybody out there, thanks for checking out another episode of NBA Takedown. We will be back with more fun and games. Me, Jeff, Sean with a W, back together on Monday. Be there or be square. We'll talk to you later. Peace out.